This is the PMP Industry Insider Podcast. You're hearing from Cole March and Triangle Pest Control's Donnie Shelton and PCO Bookkeepers, PCO M&A Specialist, and TurfBook's Dan Gordon, as well as some of the biggest players in the pest control and lawn care industries. We're talking about what is changing in the industry and taking you straight to the front lines of what the future holds. If you're ready to grow your pest control or lawn care business, you're in the right place.
Hello, everyone. Welcome out to another episode of PMP Industry Insiders Podcast, where we look at what is changing in the industry and we take you to the front lines to those that are driving those changes. My name is Donnie Shelton. I am the owner of Triangle Pest Control based out of Raleigh, North Carolina. I'm also the CEO of Cole March, a digital marketing and sales services for the home company for the home services industry. And as always, I have Dan, should I call you my partner? Is that legitimately business? I don't know.
Business partner.
Business. So we have some friends who affectionately refer to each other as their business partner. They make sure that they say that. So Dan, with that, go ahead and give us a quick. This is you.
Yeah. So Dan Gordon, and we have a company called PCO Bookkeepers, fractionalized CFO services. Tax return preparation, whatnot, and we also have a merger and acquisition service. So for anybody looking to exit at maximum value, that's what we do. And man, the market has been hot lately, and so that's good stuff. So anyway,
right.
I'm pretty excited about our guest, but Donnie, why don't you introduce him?
Yeah. So I will tell you, if anyone has spent any time with me, they know that I am a Jim Collins disciple, meaning that I have read all of his books. I train my leadership teams at both companies on his books. And I feel like if you can sit down and comprehend and, more importantly, put in the principles that are in the books like Good to Great and Built to Last and How the Mighty Falls, those types of books, you will build a solid business. And today, our topic is how do you transition your business from good to great, no matter where you're at, if you're a smaller company or a larger company. And I cannot be more excited about the guest that we have with us today to talk about this. And quick story before I introduce our guest. So if you can imagine, and I know a lot of our listeners don't or can't see us, they're listening, they're not watching, but I have a lot of gray hair. So if you can go back to 2006, when I very first started my business, Mike actually came out. We have Mike Rodler with us. He's president and CEO of Rodler Pest Solutions, and he's the second generation of the business founded by his father, Fred. And we're going to get into his whole, how he transitioned his business from good to great. But I'm on the front row at United We Stand in Greensboro, North Carolina, getting my butt kicked, literally. Like I started my business in July. This is in September. I'm losing money. I am like doing all the wrong, I had read all these leadership books. If I just be nice to people, they're all going to, follow their dreams. And Mike gets up and gives this presentation at United We Stand and completely blew my mind. Like, I remember I took so many notes when he was talking. Then I actually emailed him, and he emailed me a copy of his presentation. I printed it out and I filled it up full of notes. And truly, Mike was kind of the very first person that opened up my eyes of like, this is how you run a business. And so very excited to have him here with us today, and glad that you made some time for us, Mike. And, you've been out to CO2 a couple times. It's just great to have you on the podcast here. And so with that, Mike, anything you want to say before we get going?
Well, thank you for the gracious introduction. I am certainly happy to be here. And as always, enjoy spending time with you, Donnie, and Dan as well. And I'm all yours. Anything I can do
that help. So let's talk about this whole idea. So now you obviously have a fairly unique background. And so do you just want to give us a brief overview of your business now, and then maybe just kind of how it works? Like, if are you the only owner?
How did you get
into it? Yeah, let's start there, and then we'll
kind of figure out
what it is now.
You know.
Are you going to start at the beginning or where I'm at now? I'm sorry, I lost you there.
let's go through a chronology. How did it start?
Okay. So yeah, second generation. Just wanted to work with my dad. I mean, my dad was, you know, just a really special guy. I mean, when he passed away in 2006, I mean, you couldn't get in the parking lot of the funeral home. So it was just constant, you know, all these people that, you know, knew him. And he was a pretty simple guy. I mean, he was just liked enjoyed his family and liked helping people. He liked taking care of customers, and he loved the business. You know, he loved the idea that you could go out every day and help people and get paid for it. And that he always looked at owning his own businesses, got paid twice, because basically he got paid to do his job, but then if the business made money, he got paid as well. So it was he loved, you know, being his own boss. And so frankly, you know, growing up, you know, I just wanted to work with him. And I always say, if he was a trash hauler, I'd have been a trash hauler. If he was a veterinarian, I'd be a veterinarian, whatever. I just was happy to spend time with him. So, and I think that's not uncommon in families. But that said, so I graduate high school, go off to college for a while. You know, after about 2 years of college, I was kind of just, I just was ready to do something different. And so I decided to come to work for him. And at the time I was, you know, engaged and said, okay, you know what, a couple years is enough for me. I just want to get to work with my dad. And got married, settled down. Fast forward a few years, I got, you know, wife and two kids, and I'm trying to figure out, you know, how to, you know, make this business, you know, a viable business that, you know, I can support my family with. And I kind of had, you know, also some dreams and aspirations about making it bigger. At the time, you know, I thought bigger was going to make my life, you know, easier. That was a mistake. you know, anyway, so I start working and, you know, the business is going along. And after a while, you know, I was like, this is a lot of work. I'm working hard. And sometimes I didn't always feel like I was getting anywhere. And so I started looking for ways to do better with the company. And so I remember Whitmire back in the day, before BASF bought them, was a manufacturer of aerosols. And they used to have this symposium every year or every other year. And it was a neat event, and I learned a lot. And then I was like, you know what, I need to get more involved in more of these national type events. It seemed like there was a better quality speaker, the topics were better. So I got involved in national, and it felt like same thing. You know, I felt like it was not that the state associations weren't good. It just, I felt like the learning was at a little higher level, and there was always usually a track or two that talked about the business side of what we did versus just the technical side, which is kind of, I think, where a lot of small companies focus. And I think for good reason, you focus a lot on the technical side because you're trying to get results. And let's face it, sometimes the bugs humble us. So that said, started doing more of that and then developing some relationships. When I'd go to these meetings, I got to meet people and talk to them, whether it was, you know, in the hallways or receptions. And actually, I always go back to this. I mean, I first met the Jenkins brothers at a Whitmire symposium. I met a friend of mine, Jeff Springer, at a Dow event, and just a number of really close relationships that I've developed over the years from these national type events. And whether that was a manufacturer that put it on, or whether it was NPMA or any of them, I just felt like I made it a point to go because I felt like I was growing and I was understanding what I did much better. And I also, you know, can relate war stories with your peers as well. And there's a higher level of sharing when you go to these national events. I mean, once again, the state associations are great. I think a lot of these forums are great, but there's something to be said for standing elbow to elbow with a peer and, you know, looking them in the eye and saying, this is biting me, or this is working, or this isn't. And so consequently, you know, I think over the years, I just, you know, developed my business skills. And, you know, I'd say, you know, Bobby Jenkins, Jeff Springer, you know, Jay Nixon, Matt Nixon, a number of peers, you know, Chuck Tindall, a lot of guys really helped me understand the industry and what we do and how we do it. And so consequently, I think our business has, you know, grown quite a bit. I was the second full-time employee. We're right around 220 folks now at Rotler. We cover obviously the St. Louis marketplace, but we're also in, you know, Eastern Southern Illinois, and as well as Western Southern Illinois and Eastern Kansas. We have a business or an office in Kansas City and one in Springfield, Missouri. So we cover about a significant portion of Missouri, probably two-thirds of the state, and then we creep into the other two states as well. And you know, business is good. I've got a really strong team. I've been able to retain a lot of folks over the years, and that part makes me feel really good. It's always nice when you get more than one generation working in your company as well. And somebody's willing to bring their son in there as well, and that means a lot.
So Mike, you mentioned NPMA, and you kind of climbed up the ladder there. Can you tell us a little bit about that? And was it a worthwhile journey? And is that something that somebody who's younger, who's maybe got a smaller company and is thinking that they want to expand, is that it sounds like it's a good resource. What do you think?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, I think when you have a small business, you're like, okay, those guys don't want to hear from me. You know, national association. It's almost kind of like, you know, sometimes there's a mindset at the state level, it's them against us. And it's like, no, we're a big industry, and NPMA is our voice in Washington, which is important. And I can tell you that, you know, early on, you know, I probably felt that way at some level, at some point. You know, it's like, okay, well, I'm not relevant there, so why spend my time there? Well, I would argue that you are relevant there, and spending your time there and with an open mind of trying to learn and understand where people are coming from is really important.
Can I just pause you right there real quick, because I want to make sure that listeners pick up on what you're saying, because I think this is such a critical point. You know, I had a lot of folks, very similar story to yours, Mike, when I was coming along, of guys taking some time to sit down with me and talk with me. And so the principle that you're teaching here is that if you want to be successful, you want to grow your business, find other folks that are doing it and start asking some questions, make some relationships with them. And of course, you know, I think in your case, you know, I don't know ages between you and the Jenkins brothers and, you know, Springer, but the fact is that, you know, there's kind of these groups that just, they form naturally. And I think, you know, for me, you know, I have folks that call me now, and by the way, I don't have it figured out. So if anyone's thinking I do, please come and take a look, because you'll learn that I don't, but I'm happy to talk with folks because I feel that response, because I know that the reason I'm where I'm at today is because of the guys who helped me when I was a lot younger. And so I think, you know, you're talking about NPMA and the importance of building those relationships. There's a lot more there. You get back just as much as you contribute, in my mind. So that's the principle. I'll let you continue on there. I just want to make that point for the listeners, because I think it is a critical point.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, this industry is very unique, and I find that people, they come in without, you know, any notion about being in pest control, and it sucks them in. I mean, you see it all the time with the manufacturers. You see it with folks that had no clue about pest control. They're in the industry for a year or two, and they're like, they're never going anywhere. And I think sometimes we forget that. We don't appreciate what we really have. And I think NPMA has done a great job of fostering that. And I think, you know, it's a unique community. And I mean, I just named a few mentors, but frankly, there's tons. And I will say the other, probably the most helpful thing I think that I picked up on pretty early on that I think helped me a lot is this mindset of it's not about me. And when I sit down with a peer, I truly care about what they're doing and how can they, you know, how can I learn from them? Because they all, you know, whether it's a two-person company or a 200 or a 2,000 person organization, I've learned from all of them at a lot of things. And, you know, whether you're sitting next to John Wilson from Orkin, I mean, you know, I value those relationships because, you know, John's coming at it from a different perspective and, you know, nicest guy in the world, really good business guy, but also happy to share and help develop, you no matter what size your business is. And I think sometimes when you're a little guy, you don't understand or appreciate that these folks really do believe in what we're doing and like helping and like mentoring folks. I mean, Jeff Springer, I think, was a huge mentor in my life, as well as Bobby and a number of others. But, you know, Jeff, it's funny, you know, I figured out one time early on in our relationship, it was like, you know, Jeff was talking about his business, I was talking about mine, and I share this a lot, but it really meant, it still resonates with me. And at some point in time, I was like, you know, I'm not sure I believe what he's saying. Because, you know, you're at a function and he's telling you about what he's doing and you're going, I haven't been able to get that to work. So finally I just said, you know, Jeff, I'm going to come up and visit you. I'm not so sure what you're telling me is all that accurate. I want to see it for myself. You know, I'm from Missouri. You have to show me. That's our motto in Missouri. Anyway,
show me state. Up
there, the show me state. Exactly. So I'm like, so he's like, come on up. And I went up there and spent a couple of days with him. And I wrote pages of notes to Donnie's point earlier, pages of ideas and things I wanted to change in my business. And on the way back, it dawned on me. I was like, you know, I need to be this way with everybody in this industry because they all have something to offer. And so I honestly travel and go see my peers. You know, I typically would just pick somebody, usually somebody similar in size, maybe the next level up usually. So if my company was doing 2 million, I want to go see somebody that's doing 4 or 5.
So when you came back from Jeff's place, what was the first thing that you implemented? How do you take a company from, what was it, $78,000 to over 20 million? Where do you start? Where does it all begin?
So, I mean, obviously, I think in my case, it started with my dad about just taking care of the customer and understanding the commitment. But in terms of what Jeff taught me early on was this is a business. It's not a job. Jeff worked for Terminix for a number of years, learned a lot of good systems and processes, and then worked for Clark Pest Control out of California, and then started his own. And so I think I learned first off that this is a business, and you have to focus on the business of, you know, how you do things, whether it was your sales model or your service model. And I think that probably the first thing was you really need to focus on what's building your business and growing it, and that's reoccurring revenue, and how you present it to your customer. How you present the idea, and his company, I mean, they had good looking trucks, they had a good looking office, everything was done first rate. And I can tell you, my dad was always trying to save money. And if he'd want to buy a new truck, you know, if he could get a good deal on a red one, well, then he got a red truck. And if he could get a good deal on a white one, then he got a white truck.
So what you're saying is he had brand continuity, very much brand continuity. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, the uniform, Jeff had a uniform service. He really, you know, his office was, you know, immaculate. And, you know, I'd go down and see Bobby, same thing. You know, they Bobby's company, they were all about culture. It was like, you know, everybody sat around a table in the morning, small groups, and they talked about what happened yesterday, what was going to happen today. And they looked across the table from one another, made sure they were shaved, make sure they were ready to go to work that day. So, you know, it's going to these other companies, you pick up little things like that.
So hang on. I want to hit pause on this because I want to make sure that everyone is following here. So Mike, I think you're being pretty humble right now. You did not mention revenue from when you started to revenue circa 2020. And so I think it would be great for you to, first of all, say that kind of where you started, where you're at, and absolutely the point that it's all about finding mentors and folks to help you grow up. But I want to talk through, what did you do truly to make Rodler? And I'm sure the company was great before, but great and even better. So maybe we start there.
So joined the company in 1980 full time. I think, you know, in 79, my dad and his business did, like $72,000, one man show. And I think the first full year I was there, I think a tax return said about 104 or something like that. So it was like, okay, really a little bit, or we grew a little bit. As far as where we are now, we finished up 2020 at right around 26.5. We've had some significant growth. I think, you know, a lot of things have happened. First off, I got a great partner. I got a brother who's you know, it seems like the stuff that I don't like to do or don't do well, he does really well. And the stuff that he doesn't like to do or doesn't do well, I do pretty well. So that's been a very fruitful relationship and beneficial, I think, to both of us. And it's nice to have somebody's always got your back.
So I have a question. Let's go back to 1980. I asked this question because I'll give you my answer to it. Back in 2006, when I started Triangle, you know, I was like, man, if I make 80,000 a year in personal income, if I can get the business doing 200-300 grand a year, I'm set. That was my vision. It really was. So let's go back to 1980. Did you have like, hey, I'm going to build this 20, you know, plus million-dollar business, and I'm going to do it. Like, did you have a very solid vision right out the gate, or is it something that you kind of developed over time?
You know, it's funny. Actually, I remember telling myself, I didn't share it a lot, but I really kind of wanted to make it a regional company. I mean, I felt like my dad grew a nice business in St. Louis and great reputation. That's probably when it was all said and done. You know, my dad had essentially a job. He was happy with that. And I think over the years, he was always, you know, kind of looking at me like, oh, what are you doing? You know, this is a good business the way it is. What are you doing?
You're screwing it up.
Yeah, you're messing it up.
And there's times when I thought the same thing. you know, back in my head, as a young man, 21 years old, I think I was thinking, 20, north of 20 would be a nice number to get to. Obviously, that stuff changes over time. But that said, I think, probably the one thing that helped me also get there was, for my dad, I mean, we work our tail off. My brother and I, we would work night and day, whatever it took to take care of the customer. And we were trying to grow the business, but more importantly, to take care of the customer. I just remember at one point in time, you're hiring people and some of them stay, some of them don't. And I thought to myself, I need to make sure I treat people the way my dad treats us. Like, he was never a critical guy. He was never, hey, you screwed this one up. You know, he was always trying to build you up. And that's not always easy to do. But I remember thinking to myself, I need to be that way with the people that work here. I need to make sure that they see that side of me and they don't see the other side. And I think that's important that if you're growing a business, it's really not about you, especially in this industry, because we're a service company. So it's all about getting things done through others. And I just know that we did everything the best we could because we enjoyed working for my dad. Obviously, it was a family connection as well. But so I think you want to try to simulate that. And if you're not comfortable with that, I'm not so sure that it's the right industry for you to be in.
When you and your dad got into it, you probably had everything in your head. And in order to scale it, so some of our listeners are small, some are medium sized, some are trying to move to the next level. You've got to systematize things. So what is the first thing that you systematized? Obviously, you get sales process, accounting process, operations process. How did you decide what to do first? And if you were to do it over again or write a book on how to do it, how would that look?
Well, I think, process is important as you grow. But I would also say that while process is important, I think fundamentally the point I just made about really looking at your employees and trying to develop that relationship and that culture. It's funny, I joined Vistage as well back, it's probably been about 22, 23 years ago. We had a speaker by the name of Pat Murray. He talked about the power of groups. And that was something that I think also helped us grow is I couldn't have everybody reporting to me. So I needed people to develop others in the organization. And frankly, sometimes, having these groups, these small groups that we set up. And I remember seeing it at Bobby's place. Bobby's got a bunch of small groups. He's got all these techs sitting in small groups, and these guys are helping each other. These men and women are helping each other develop in their job. And so and people don't like to leave groups. So I would, once again, I think that that process I applied to setting up direct reports service managers and really kind of helping people in the organization grow and develop, essentially mentors in the organization. But I'm not sure if that answers your question right or not, but I think, you know, I think process is important and how you go about doing your job every day. And that stuff's fairly easy to document and lay out. Obviously, you gotta spend time training it, but I think the culture side of it is kind of not always appreciated, but it's important, especially in today's world. Mm-hmm.
So I was gonna say there's two things out of there that resonated with me, and I think I agree with this. Again, going back to the being a Collins disciple, him and Bill Lazier wrote a book called Beyond Entrepreneurship. It's one of the first books he wrote. And one of the points they make in there is the same principle you just talked about, the power of small groups. And one of the things he said is, like, you know, if you look at research, people are fine with letting themselves down. They're okay with letting a big company down, but they will almost kill themselves not to let their peers down. And so when they work in a team of 3 to 4 people, you know, it really just it brings out the best in folks. And so I could not agree with that more. I think it is important that you develop these small teams. And then the other part of it, and Dan alluded to this, which is, you know, you build your processes, but the other part of it is, and I see a lot of folks that somehow, some way they miss this step, is you create a system of people development. You have to realize to grow your business, you have to grow your people. And that's where it starts. If you grow your people, the business will follow. If you try to grow the business without growing your people, you will go insane.
Johnny, real quick, the name of that book and the author?
Yeah, so the name of the book is Beyond Entrepreneurship, and it's Jim Collins and Bill Lazier. Great book. It's kind of an unknown, one of the more unknown books, but it is, the thing I like about that book is, you know, when you get into Good to Great and Built to Last, and those books are like, this is business strategy, right? This is, and, you know, it's funny because Mike said, hey, recurring revenue. I 100% agree. And Beyond Entrepreneurship, it's all about the CEO. It's all about the owner. It's all about, like, okay, you're sitting in the seat. Now here's some things for you to think about. And so anyway, not to derail the conversation here, which I've already done, and we're well down this road. But
you do that periodically.
So Mike, since we're on this topic of Good to Great, it's, by the way, it's phenomenal what you've done with Rottler. And I know that you have a son now in the business, and I'm sure he's got this clear vision of a $100 million company. I'm not for sure. But can you just walk us through what you feel like were some key steps along the way? Like, you know, hey, you know, we did this, or we, you know, I had this like epiphany and it changed everything. You just talked about one with, you know, these small groups and being at Vistage, but anything else you can think of that would be like, yeah, you know, when I learned that, it made a huge difference in my business.
Yeah, I think there was a series of them. I mean, one of them was joining Vistage. I remember early on, prior to that, I hired a CFO. I hired literally a guy to come in my office a half a day every week. And Pat is still in our organization and really just a true asset at a lot of levels. I got lucky that I hit the lottery on that one. I think then joining Vistage was, you know, I was sitting there going, am I really going to spend, you know, at the time it was, I don't know, $1,000 a month on personal development for myself. And I remember Pat saying this, he said, because I asked him, I go, do you think I should do this? And it's a lot of money. And he's like, Mike, if you're going to grow the business, he says, you know, you're going to need to build your skill sets along the way. So it's probably, you know, it's okay to spend $1,000 a month on personal development. And so, you know what? It really did help me a lot. I learned a lot about the numbers and about, you know, about business concepts and really. So Vistage or any type of, you know, personal development training, I think, is going to be a good CEO and grow with your organization is important. I think that one, I think, you know, obviously going to see Jeff was huge just because over the years, Jeff, you know, was always that guy I could call and he would tell me the truth, whether I wanted to hear it or not. You know, a number of guys like that as well, but Jeff was always one of those. He'd tell you and he'd make it, he was blunt about it as well. Like, that's a good idea, or no, that's you might want to rethink that, or that's a dumb idea.
That's the way he said it.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, you know, obviously having mentors along the way, I would also go see other companies. I typically would go, if not every year, every other year. I've probably been, and I look back over the years, I've probably been in and out of, you know, 25, 30 companies that have really helped me, different processes. I mean, I went to go see Greg Clendenin with Middleton and taught me all about call centers. I didn't go there to learn about call centers. I just went there to learn about Greg and his company. And then I went to go see Jamie Ogle and at Lloyd's and learned a lot of things about process and budgeting. And the budgeting, it's funny, goal setting was one that, you know, Jamie helped me a lot with, Vistage helped me a lot with, but there's a power in goal setting with your people. And to your point earlier about Donnie, they don't want to let their peers down. I mean, we set, you know, technician goals, branch goals, and, you know, these guys, they work hard to get there. It's not we don't just stumble into them. If we don't get there, they really do like to hit their goals and they feel good about that. I remember going to see, out of Clark Pest Control. Clark Pest Control has a whole ritual of once a month coming together, all the branches come together and talk about what they did in the past month. So strategic planning, we do an annual planning meeting. Actually, lately, the last few years, we've had Steve Good from, you know, he's retired from Termdex, but Steve would come in and do our strategic plan for us. So once again, I think, you know, it's been a lot of things as the company's developed, but, you know, I think we talked early on about the basics, about just, you know, having a vision and trying to help people or trying to get people in your organization and keep them there.
So do you have
number one reason?
Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say the number one reason customers cancel our service is when we change technicians. So I always tell my people, it's like, my job is to keep you here. My job is to keep you here and keep you happy. And if you stay, then I'm doing it right. And if you're leaving, then I'm doing something wrong.
Mm-hmm. So sorry, as far as the strategy meetings, who's involved? Do you have like a top leadership one and then another one where you include more people? And do you have one big one where you include everyone? How does all that work?
So our strategic planning meeting, we try to have a slice of the organization at each level there. Obviously, we've got some leaders, but we also try to have some folks that are kind of, you know, they can speak to what happens in their world and whether we're on the right track or not. And usually it's somebody who volunteers to be a part of it. And we try not to pick them. We try to see if they want to do it. And I found it to be really helpful just from a standpoint of, you know, sharing the information, getting, you know, fresh ideas, as well as I think it helps to have that understanding. I mean, as your organization grows and you're able to retain people, they can speak to what's, you know, happened over the years and how things have changed and improved. And that certainly has a lot of value, especially when you're rolling out a new idea. In our case, we're rolling out a software change. So I have a lot of nervous people right now. But that'll hopefully
it's a very difficult one.
Yeah, it's not an easy one, but
never goes well.
I'm excited about it.
Oh,
yeah.
Good. Yeah.
So I have another question, and you know, here in North Carolina, there's two types of barbecue, and so there's always this never-ending argument. And I know that by opening this up, I'm probably going to do the same. But I have seen this done two ways. You talked about Bobby, and I've been to Bobby's operation a couple times, and I'm always impressed with his leadership team. And his leadership team, there's some longevity there. Most of them are homegrown, you know. But I see other businesses who are like, oh, we're at 10 million. We need to get to the next level. Let's, you know, fresh team here. Let's start over. Let's reboot. I'm curious to hear your philosophy and why. I mean, first of all, obviously you have a leadership team. I don't think you run a $20 million business by yourself. Are your leaders homegrown? Have they been with you a long time? Like, what's your philosophy in that regard? Because I think it is all about building a team, right? So
most of them are homegrown. But however, I will step out occasionally and bring folks in. And we've added over the last few years, we've added two or three different people. I'm trying to think of probably three at a fairly high level that weren't in the organization 5-6 years back. But the vast majority of folks on my leadership team have been there 10, 15, 20, 25 years. So I think it's great when you do it internally, but there's also times when if you just don't have that talent internally, you need to go outside the organization. And I found if you make the right hire, the people that have been there for a while respect it, understand it, and appreciate it. Maybe not the one who was up for the job may not feel that way initially, but they usually stick around and see it after a while that it was the right call. And I got an example. I got a sales manager. It took me a while to get the right sales manager, but I can tell you I've got a great one, and we love him, and he's really been he's had a significant impact on the company. So
there's always a debate back and forth when you're looking for a new position, industry people or outside the industry, or how do you make that determination?
So there again, I've done both. Once again, I feel like it's about the person, and you think they're a good fit with your team, the personality, as well as the skill set that they bring. But it's nice when they have experience. I always go back to Vistage speakers that, when you're looking to hire, you need three things. You need, obviously talent. You need the ability to work with others. And if you can get it, experience. And so I would say, we always go out the door looking for all three, but we can get by without experience. We need the other two. We need to have the talent. Absolutely. We need to have the ability to work with others. So, but I think on the whole, I prefer to grow them internally. And that's been my, my initial approach. But sometimes, like I said, there's been a few different situations where, and I think sales manager is one of them, because I think that's probably the toughest hire in our industry. I really believe it's a tough hire.
So we're getting close to the end here, and I wanna make sure that we sum it up as best as we can in this whole idea of good to great. And I'm gonna try and you guys can sit back and eat popcorn and make fun of me here, but I'm going to try to articulate our conversation into kind of a summary. Mike, I'm going to let you finish this out. So it sounds like, at least in your case, again, phenomenal job, growing your business. But if I were to kind of take it back, it is the key points that we've talked about is number one, looking at this whole idea of, okay, let's find someone who's doing what I'm doing, who's either slightly above or in revenue, or make those relationships early, just so that you have almost like your own board, that you can bounce ideas off of and learn from and visit those type. So that was kind of concept one. That's where we started. Then we talked a little bit about developing your own people. We also talked a little bit about vision, and kind of having a path that you're going down. But then we got into, from that, just this whole idea of really understanding your team and understanding your job and in making small teams. And so with that, anything else that you could think of in this transition from good to great? I think of, early on when I was getting started, any bit of information I could get, I wanted to implement it immediately. Any insight, advice, I was all ears. So I'm going to give you the mic here and say, okay, anything else you can think of to consider if you're, trying to make this transition from good to great?
Well, obviously, I think, it starts with, if you're the leader, then it starts with you. It's about, having the passion and the vision. And then it's about, trying to find the right folks. And I liken it to most folks that you bring on board, as long as they're, they have the talent and the ability to work with others, you can get them there. And so then it's about, you set up an environment for them to be successful. It's really about developing your folks and watching them. And do you enjoy watching people grow, or is it more about what you like to do? I tend to say, I think initially I was like, I'm going to grow this business. I'm going to do this. And you quickly realize that it's not about you. And it is, you really enjoy watching others grow and succeed. And I don't think you can hide that stuff. I think you have to truly believe it. And I can tell you that, it's been a process for me personally. And now I have my son in the business, I think he will get it and do better faster than I ever did, because I think he truly does enjoy working with others and developing others. It's funny, when I brought him in, I've had him work in a number of places now. He's been there 10 years, and I've moved him about every 6 months to maybe every 2 years into a different spot. So he started out, with the termite crew. I don't think there's any shortcuts in his business either.
Hang on, you put him on the termite crew, so you gave him the red carpet treatment.
Yeah. So he was in the crawl spaces.
And, that's right.
Oh, yeah. Best one was I sent him to Springfield, and he didn't have any help within 3 hours, and he was running about a $180,000 business in Springfield and by himself for probably 9 months. And which basically was the territory he covered was about three times the size of our St. Louis marketplace, and he was doing it by himself. So he learned trial by fire, and he still talks to me.
What's his vision? You said that he's going to move it quicker. So does he have a bigger, grander, 26 million or whatever you're at? That's nothing. Wait till I'm done. What's his vision?
It's funny. Up until recently, he really never said. But we had a conversation about, a month and a half ago, because the St. Louis Business Journal came out with this top 150 privately held companies in the market, and he made a comment that he wanted to get Rattler on that list. I think the largest company or the smallest company on that list was 150 or 130. I don't remember the number exactly, but he made a comment that he wanted to get Rattler on that list. And so I think he has a lot of pride in his grandfather's business. I think he has a lot of pride in the organization that Rattler is, and I think he really does like his coworkers, his teammates. He feels like we've got a good group, and it's fun to watch. I mean, I think he part of putting them in those different roles is he's earned their respect at a lot of levels. And so I don't know how long I'm going to be around there. I'm thinking I'll step down at some point and maybe just be around if you need something. But
if you bring your son in, if you bring your son in, you either have to make him get in the crawl space and do everything else or change his last name.
There you go. I hope the transition well. That's my, I want to do it gracefully if I can.
Well, I tell you what, a 10-year timeline, that's a very graceful transition. And I like that plan of him earning, it's, obviously, I have seen, as with anything, sometimes the second generation does worse than the first, right? And then sometimes the second generation takes it to the next level. And in this case, it's the third. But I think that's a wise move on your part, and excited to see where Rattler goes from here. And so with that, Mike, I cannot thank you enough. This has been a wonderful time to sit down with you and learn a bit more about your business, how you transitioned it from good to great. One question I always ask all of our guests, if someone wants to reach out, you don't need to share your cell number, your email address or anything, but any problems with them just, saying, hey, maybe just spending some time with you or catch you at an event, is that all right for them to do that?
Oh, by all means. I'm always happy to entertain folks, but I also, I let my staff do the same. So if I'm not available, my son, my brother, they all know we have an open door, and we're happy to share. It's a great industry, and just happy to pass along what we've learned anytime we can. And it's usually, I find more often than not, it's a two-way street. You learn from everybody.
Absolutely.
So, Rattler, Rattler.com. You pull up Rattler.com. my cell. I'm happy to give it, 314-662-0784.
Okay, awesome. Everybody hear that?
Yeah.
Write it down.
Well, and with that, thank you everyone for joining us for yet another episode of PNP Industry Insider Podcast. This has been such a great time. Thanks again, Mike, for your participation. And with that, we will see everyone next time. Don't forget, if you enjoyed this podcast or any other ones that we have, please rate and review us on Apple. And with that, I'm going to sign off. Dan, any parting thoughts before we finish out?
Just thanks so much, Mike. It's been a pleasure, and I always learn something, and really appreciate it.
Yep.
Thank you.
All right, guys.
Thank you both.
Until next time, we'll see you now.
Yeah. Bye.